I would like to today revisit a topic which I had discussed to a small extent a little while ago. And that topic is the topic of what people historically and traditionally have labeled that energy which are the forces of evil. Now, it's of course interesting to everybody to understand what is this energy which seems to be evil and how to deal with it. Throughout time, the battle between good and evil has been written about, has been discussed, has been placed into theatrical performances, and basically has been a fundamental issue for everybody. Sometimes people speak in terms of that which is demoniac and that which is divine. Even in the Bhagavad Gita, we find out about the divine and demoniac natures. However, what is actually good, what is actually evil, is not always clear. It's not always obvious. It's not something which is black and white. There are many shades of gray. There are many shades and variations of how you can look at it, how you can see it, how you can perceive it. And this is what makes confusion. Now, if that which we would want to call demoniac looked demoniac and had obvious characteristics, in other words, had a big sign that said demon, it would be very easy to deal with it. But obviously nobody's wearing a sign which says what they are. And it's not because they're trying to hide. It's because I really doubt that people would accept such designations, such black and white designations. So when I was speaking about this good and evil are topics which many, many people are interested in throughout time. And I was just saying that defining each of us as either black or white, as divine or demoniac, would be a very difficult thing to do because none of us would accept such a designation. Now, for example, a lot of you out there think of yourselves as good people, as spiritual people, but if there were such designations, would you allow the sign that said divine to be on your chest? Would you walk around with a divine sign on your chest? Naturally, you would have a very difficult time to accept that. Like, people would think of you, now are you divine? Because you would do things periodically which were not so divine, and you would feel badly about it. So in a similar way, that personality who somebody might wish to put a label of demoniac on would refuse that definition. They would think, but I'm not bad. Just because somebody has a designation of a demoniac does not mean that they would have to act demoniacally all the time. In other words, it's not black and white. The one who you might wish to designate as demoniac, the one you might wish to designate as divine, they are not in all respects fitting these categories, even if you thought they would. What is good and what is evil? It's a tough thing to decide, actually, because there are so many factors involved which make it very complex. Now, I know in my life, and I don't think I'm that much different than everybody else, I think a lot about things that are good, things that are evil. And I try to come to terms with what makes it good, what makes it evil, in myself or anyone else. Sometimes things happen in my life which make me very upset, make me very angry, make me act in ways which I may not feel very good about later on. Does that make me evil? Sometimes I do things which are very good. I feel good about it, but does that make me good? Christians have dealt with this topic by saying statements such as, don't hate the sinner, hate the sin. And yet, why should you hate the sin? After all, we do things sometimes because we have a real need to do it, or there's a real purpose in what we do. What makes it more confusing is that everyone does what they think is right at the time they do it. For example, those who do things which are perhaps considered to be demoniac, they think there's a real good reason to do what they do. They are very convinced that what they are doing is right, not only for themselves, but for others. Now, is there some way to come to this definition which would apply universally and which would fill absolutely all cases? Well, I was thinking about that this morning, and I was considering about this good and evil thing, and then I kind of thought that, you know, it seems to boil down to politics, and I'll explain that. Now, I know that sounds funny, but if you think about it, politics to a large extent is based on parties. Now, I don't mean parties like in America, they have Democrats and Republicans, and they have Labour and Conservatives in England, and then they have Social Democrats and blah, 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 all over the place. But I mean to say, groups of people who gather together who have a similar interest for some time. So some people have a certain interest for some time. They gather together in a group to give themselves strength so that they can fulfill their desires. So there are different parties, different groups, because different sets of people feel it's in their interest to have ideas, and that creates this group with their idea, this group with their idea, that group with their idea, separations. And this creates the friends and enemies problem, where some people you think are your friends, some people you think are your enemies, and you act differently towards each. Now, this creation of parties, or political kind of parties, and I don't mean it in the sense of governmental politics, I mean it in the sense of interest groups, is one of the basic sources of conflict in this world. Now, spirituality is based on bringing people together, bringing together all living beings in this unity of oneness, that we are all together in our spiritual connection. We are all connected with the divine source of all beings. There's only one of us. This idea of interest groups, where there's friends and there's enemies, is quite contrary to this principle of spirituality. It's actually the cause of the breakdown of this principle of spirituality. When most people don't have the capacity to allow multiplicity of interests to live side by side without conflict. Perhaps in some utopian place, or even in the spiritual realm, there may be that capacity to have completely opposite interests residing cooperatively and everybody having their space to do what they want. But in this realm where we are living now, that seems to be totally impossible, because often the interests of one group will smother the interests of another group. You will see this. I want this, you want that. And when that what you want and that what I want conflicts, we have this problem. Now let's go back to this, like, good and evil and divine and demoniac, and try to fit these understandings together with this definition of interest groups, as in political parties. So now if you think about it, let's say, if we were to define evil, nowadays it's very popular to define terrorists as evil. It's a question of their interests being against our interests. And we call others as evil when their act of what we call terror causes physical harm to us. Now, if we were to speak and actually listen to those who are so-called terrorists, wherever they may come from, we will find that these are people like us who have families, like we have, who have economies and interests like we have, who feel that their capacity to live, their capacity to live their lives the way they wish to do so, has been so irrevocably destroyed that they are just trying anything they can to recapture it. There are many reasons how people end up in such situations, how people feel that they are so backed up against the wall that they've got no other opportunity but to lash out violently. Now, previously, we had the Machiavellian kind of politic, which was not very spiritual in one sense. And yet, according to the religious understanding at the time, may have been very much in tune with spirituality at the time. Might makes right. The ends justify the means. After all, if you think about their conception of God at that time, the all-powerful, the most mighty, and because God was the most mighty, what God wanted was right, because his might made it right. So therefore, by natural law, by natural conclusion, it's kind of like philosophical physics, whatever has the most power proclaims what is right. Now that is, of course, true. We see it even today. But in good modern politics, what is might and what is power has transformed. There is now the shifting of power is going on. The shifting of reality has started to take place in a very serious way, which questions this basic premise. It's funny, I just thought of another thing, which is going to completely screw up this discussion if I say it, but also in Christianity, the meek shall inherit the earth. And if you think about it, all of this manipulation with power usually ends up destroying those who use it. Let's just take the example of Iraq. We have here a country where really there was no reason to invade it. So this big, huge force went in to invade it and defeated, quote unquote, the enemy, quote unquote, and is now occupying it. Basically, this invasion was done because it could be done. It was possible to do, and so therefore it was done. And the statement was, we are mighty, and we are therefore right, and because we have this capacity, what we do is right. But time has changed. Might is no longer right in the same sense as it was first conceived. Power has shifted. Power has shifted in a very subtle way, away from the traditional understanding of might. And there are many forces in that country which are causing such instability that there's no way the mighty can maintain their occupation. And now those who are fighting to get rid of the occupiers have become so mighty that it's obvious to all except a very few that the occupation has failed. So let's go back and try to label the good and evil of it all. Was it the good, the force of good, that did the occupation, did the invasion? Is it now the force of evil, which is killing and destroying there? Why do we say this is good? This killing and destruction is good, and that killing and destruction is evil. Well, it's obvious. It just depends on where you live and what you believe in. If you live in one country, you think, yes, that's good. Invasion is good. Occupation is good. And all these other people are evil. If you live there, you may think, yes, what we are doing to stop this invasion and occupation is good, and all the occupiers are evil. So it's a very complex thing, describing what is the good and what is the evil. But the most interesting part of this is how the power, the might, has shifted away from the mighty. How power is something which can just fall through your fingers at a moment's notice by some strange arrangement of fate. Now, usually spiritualists do not get involved in politics in the traditional sense of the term, yet I feel it's very important that spiritual principles now be reestablished within the political arena. Because those who engage in the politics on the global scale have a much larger responsibility now than has ever been there before. The environmental destruction, this change of climate, this increase of catastrophic possibility is affecting all of us. Volatile economies, unstable social situations are affecting all of us. So we have a situation where spiritual principles are required to assist those who think they have might to do right. Now, previously, when there were two groups, there was the group which was stronger, there was the group that was weaker. That's just always the way it is. There's a strong, there's a weak. So the strong declares this is right, the weak is forced to accept it by being crushed unless they do. And periodically there are two groups which are relatively equal in strength, and when they get to the same force of conflict, they fight and there's a war. Now, neither of these traditional methods work anymore because it's just impractical to go out and fight wars, because you cannot win a war. You never could, but especially now, it's not possible to win a war. Considering the incredible capacity of a few dedicated individuals to cause very great destruction nowadays, and the resulting paranoia and fear in large, mighty groups of people, war is not a practical alternative. So this traditional understanding is very complex, because we all know that large countries with nuclear power engaging in a war certainly means destruction that we don't even want to think about. So the spiritual principle of politic is one in which interest groups are recognized and compromise or facilitation is essential. Now, we've seen the corporate world has woken up to this facilitation ideal in its management quite some time ago. And those managers within the corporate world who are facilitators are much more successful than those who are dictators. Because businesses are made to make money, they wake up rather rapidly to the point of how they can maximize their profits. And they make managerial changes accordingly. They're much more sensitive, in other words, than political people. So instead of just telling employees what to do and demanding or firing them if they don't, corporate leaders who are most successful facilitate them, bring out their creativity, help them to establish themselves to do the right thing in their own particular aspect of the work. Now, politicians don't feel that they should do like that, because the traditional way in which a politician remained in power and the traditional way in which they used their power was quite different than a facilitator. They were more or less trying to fulfill the interests of interest groups. And they only would do that according to the way in which it would benefit them personally. And if it meant to get elected, I would have to help this interest group and I would crush another interest group, they wouldn't care about it. Now, some of the principles which are so important for an enlightened management would have to include the principle of facilitating people, facilitating solutions, facilitating ways in which everybody can get their piece of the global pie. Now, obviously, there are situations where some people say abortion is killing, it's murder, it has to be stopped, and other people say it's a right, we have to have it. These are 180-degree conflicting views, and coming to balance this is not easy. But if we are led by personalities who don't have any understanding of facilitation, who think in terms of black and white, in terms of good and evil, of divine and demoniac, of this is bad, this is good, it must be so, and I have the power, there'll be a lot of war, a lot of conflict. Now, I don't mean to be, over-impressed with myself and thinking that I've got a solution here. If they would only just do like this, everything would be fine. It is not so. There are problems. There are questions which are monstrously difficult. There are totally opposing opinions. There are really sources of enormous conflict. Yet, there are ways to act which will prevent the crushing of one interest group by another interest group who's got the power. One also has to include when you just ignore, you don't care about one aspect because you've got the power to ignore. That's just as bad. If you look in the Vedic histories of kings, and you'll find these same issues are discussed in almost the same way. For example, you will find that the kings found it advantageous to not crush someone just because they could. They would fight face to face with equals. They would protect those who were weaker. And every person had the opportunity to have an audience with the king, speak with them, and have their grievances listened to and understood. They were not neglected. That wasn't because the kings needed the votes, because they weren't elected. It was because that was their responsibility to each and every person. Yet absolutely, you would find they had the same kind of conflict. Somebody said black, somebody said white. You know the story of the cow that went in the other herd and the king had to figure out what to do with this cow. Adding spiritual principles to politics doesn't mean you're going to have a solution to everything. But it does mean that these constant agitations, which create this increase of violence everywhere, will be tempered. It does mean that this enormous destruction of the prosperity and peace of general people everywhere will be understood for what it is. I very much respected the Vedic historical accounts of kings, of aristocracy, of the way they did things. It was somehow or another really good for people. We even see in Duryodhana, who people would think would be a bad person, he was actually a good king. The public did not suffer under Duryodhana. Now, if you think about these historic examples, they were within the context of a spiritual culture. So the politics and the spirituality were linked to a large extent. In other words, the politicians or the kings and the saintly personalities worked together. So we do have a historical example of how spiritualists and politicians can have a mutually beneficial relationship. Yet, at the same time, we see how the good and evil enters right into this, right into the heart of the essence of the stability of the world, right there. If you just pinpoint and focus where the heart of the whole problem lies with this good and evil, this divine, this demoniac, the way it affects the world. You go right to where spirituality and management meet. And you will see it always is connected with the mighty causing difficulties to the weak and neglecting the voice of the individual. So the point is that when you've got this situation where the connection between the spirituality and the practical manifestation of it is broken, that's where evil finds its place. So what is this evil anyway we just started talking about? I threw that word in. Were you paying attention? I did a really nasty thing to you. I just chucked that word right in there. Evil. I made a value judgment and threw it right at you. Why did I do that? Well, because I have certain principles which I think are good and certain things I think are bad. Let's just take the example of children. Let's say you've got children and they are supposed to be in a school and so on. Now, you could harm them in a variety of ways. One way would be a physical way. Another way would be by neglect. Let's go back to this mite. A person with power who uses it against the weak is in the might makes right. I can do it, therefore I will do it. I should do it because I can do it, and might makes right. And therefore, children are mainly harmed by adults in such situations, or by older children who have the power to do so. And then there's neglect. Why is that neglect there? Because it's not in the interests of certain managerial parties to take the effort to protect the weak. Because they don't care. Because it's too difficult. Because they want to enjoy something else. It's not important for them. It's not their interest to assist this other party, so they neglect it. So the way in which the entire Vedic culture of king and management and protection, the whole Kshatriya principle, was destroyed was right there at these two principles. When the spiritualists or the spiritual principles were polluted by self-interest, where those who were supposed to be spiritual decided that the kings should work for them, give them money, give them power, defeat their enemies. And because they weren't interested in helping, or they would like to neglect various parties, they would use their literatures, their scriptures, their religious books as justification for not considering the needs of various personalities in the kingdom. So this caused the systematic dismantling of the connection between the political leaders and the actual divine principle of leadership. And these principles brought in systematic justification of things which I would judge as evil. And who are the weak? Well, old people. Just see how in America nowadays, the whole Social Security system is going under because the money is being borrowed upon and pensions may not be given, even in companies. The retirement funds may not be there anymore. How old people, weak, are being exploited. And I look at the sick in this place too. Old people, sick people, expenses going sky high, although inflation goes little by little, as the greed of the medical profession is just sucking dry people on the basis of health, charging more and more. Why? Because they can, because they have the power. They have the cure, you have the disease, you must pay whatever they ask. This is the politic of self-interest. That if I have the power to make more money at your expense, I will do it because I have the power. Might makes right. This is one of the major problems in the world where money rules. That whoever, because they have the interest to get that money, whoever has the power to get it that way will use it. And in whatever way exploitation can take place to make money, there is no concern about the effect of it. And that is why the environment has gone to hell and will continue to do so at a rapid rate, because it's in the interest, economic interests of people to continue making money at the expense of the environment. There are fuel-efficient cars, but people will not buy them because they cost more than regular cars. So they make a spreadsheet that says that, well, if I were to just pay more for the gas, I would not be able to pay off the expense of the car. So because it's just an economic issue and nothing more, I'll stick with what I've got. So how do you define evil? Well, again, in the beginning I said it's based on interest groups. It's a political thing. That which gives me what I want creates a group of people who have similar interests. And my capacity to crush others, to get my way, is what I would define as evil. It goes very clearly down to this basic principle. Might does not make right. That neglect and overwhelming of the weak is the basic principle of self-interest, which is the basis of that which, if I had to use the word, would define as evil. Now that word evil is so overused, is so completely mixed up between cultures, and everybody's got their own opinion about it. It's a meaningless word. It's a word that has no meaning anymore. So I would use the word not right. What is right, not right. I like to do what is right. I like to not do what is not right. Some people are born into families where they're taught to exploit others as a basic principle of life. They are programmed that way. You will find politicians are coming in long lines of people who have developed this mentality. But those who don't have that mentality, who actually want to do good things, when they hit that political environment where their livelihood, their survival in that office depends on compromising their principles to fit within their party, they lose their capacity to do what is right. So it is very, very essential in my mind that we focus on the roots where this not right is born. Just like in a family, if the husband thinks because he's got power, he can slap the wife because he's stronger, that's not right. If somebody thinks that just because they have the power to cause trouble to others, they can do so, that's not right. In other words, we have to have this spiritual vision that what is in the interest of another is also my interest. That I don't stand alone. I am not an island unto myself. I am part of a great group of spiritual beings whose energy is so interconnected that we cannot stand alone, especially today. For example, as nowadays, as this sophisticated means of causing difficulty to others increases, as we become more sophisticated in our capacity to do things which are not good, there is more and more awareness throughout the world of it. I find that very interesting. In the old days, simply the powerful would just walk over the weak. But now, as one becomes more sophisticated with doing the wrong thing, the means by which we can all be connected is increasing fantastically. We are understanding how to connect so nicely, how to connect so globally with each of us, how to do it in such a way that we can just simply hear the opinions from all over the world, find out things from people all over the world. It's increasing. And the power is shifting. Now, I'm not saying that this is a very great power right now in the sense that it's going to change something now or even soon. But what I mean to say is that politicians should see this as a trend and institute these spiritual principles of being able to deal with the weak and to not neglect. They'll be able to increase their power that way. Now, some people would say money is the root of all evil, and I would agree with that too. But that money is related with these two principles of crushing the weak and neglecting what you can. Now, obviously, I don't have like answers to all of these problems. Obviously, I'm not trying to say that this is the solution to everything. But what I have been trying to suggest here, trying to been present here, is that understanding what really is the cause of these difficulties that we face in the world today would be very useful for a global conferencing on what principles will underlie the transformation of the world. And I just tried to do my part here by giving out some information about it. And I know that it's not directly like related to mysticism and spirituality, yet it is, because there has to be the connection between the spirituality and the practical manifestation in this world. And I've even found that spiritual groups which neglect this principle, these two very important principles, end up causing enormous trouble, even to their own members. Therefore, it's important for everybody. I'm sure there are more principles, there are more things which are important. There are hundreds of things we could talk about. But I was trying to pinpoint and focus on just two of them to start this understanding, at least in our own mind. The idea is that as if politicians... No, let's start all over. The person asking this has said that they have a very close connection to the transcendental truth when they allow themselves to follow their inner voice, that when they follow the inner voice, it is very beneficial for them. That within this world, this manifestation has allowed a unique experience which transcended everything experienced, learned, or heard from before, from all different sources. It gives a great energy and just overwhelms them and gives them the impression that it's just the perfect thing to help one come in connection with oneself and to help others in a more, and also to connect with others in a spiritual way. And that if others, for example, politicians or whoever, leaders or those with power, would also trust in the voice of the Supreme Within, then everything would go much better in this world. Well, I would, of course, not disagree that listening to the inner voice, coming in contact with the spirituality within would be a good thing. I could not disagree with that. But when you start talking about the voice within, you get into all kinds of trouble, and I'll talk about that right now. It was very interesting about maybe 3 months ago, 4 months ago on PBS, which is the public broadcasting in America. I heard an interesting show. It was the radio. But this public broadcasting is not a business, and it has no particular agenda. So it's basically just giving you the truth. So it was an interview with a very conservative Republican who was very upset how born-again Christians had taken over the government of the United States. The point of it being that there was a religious agenda behind what they were doing. Now, obviously, they think they are following the Supreme. They think they are hearing the voice of God. So they are sure that what they are doing is divinely inspired. Now, that's no small point. That's a very major point. And therefore, I avoided speaking about, that's why I would not agree with this idea that if politicians would trust in the voice of the Supreme Within, things would go better, because after all, how do you know what you're hearing? And then you've got another problem. It's even stated in Vedic literature that God is encouraging the thief how to steal better and encouraging the householder not to be stolen from in a neutral way. So both are hearing the voice of God in that example. So does that mean that both are connected with the Supreme and therefore absolutely right and therefore things will go better for all? And again, there was that interesting movie that I spoke about last time, was in St. Petersburg, about Joan of Arc, where she was convinced that she was following God's order to attack the English. But it could just as well have been her desire to do so, and she rationalized it by saying this was God telling her. This voice within jazz, very complicated. What is the source of the voice? Is it yourself? Is it your mind? Is it your deepest feelings? Is it some person over there? Is it some long dead relative? Is it God? Is it a demigod? Is it a ghost? God knows who. Not so simple. Not so simple to be clear and understand exactly the source of your connections. I have many connections. I'm not sure which one is speaking in which way, although there are particular ones who help me in particular ways. But before I act on any of it, I have to agree. It's, in other words, ultimately my decision to act or not act. And therefore, for me to say my decision is because I was directed by God, that this is a connection with God, whatever, would be wrong, because ultimately I am the one who is agreeing to act on whatever the source of that information is. Now, what do we mean by the inner voice? I suppose that's different than that kind of voice. Maybe. It depends. After all, I mean, where would you hear, theoretically speaking? I can give an answer to this, but this is just a rhetorical question. Where would you hear the voice from outside? Which part of you would hear it? And physically, where is the voice within? Is it within your head? Is it within your heart? Is it within your fingertip? In other words, I know, you know, when there's a voice within. I know you know that. And I know when there's a voice within. But to define the voice within in a specific way is perhaps misleading to yourself. Some people are absolutely convinced about that voice within, the inner voice. They're just convinced. They just are totally 100% into it, and it works for them. Okay, fine. Some people are even in charge of countries who think like this. So we have the Christian voice within ruling one country, and we have the Islamic voice within ruling another country, and then they have total conflict. So therefore, I don't really think that emphasizing this particular principle would really help things at all. I think they're already doing that. Therefore, I focused on practical principles which are born of spirituality but are very practical. They don't demand any esoteric knowledge. They don't demand any mystical knowledge. Because when you talk about might, not making right, in other words, not to use strength just because you can, but to use strength for the benefit of others, to protect or to encourage or to help, or to just be there and not neglect just because you can or you don't feel interested. These are important managerial principles. I talked about facilitation as a practical principle. And these are based, all these principles are based in the spiritual principles of seeing everyone else's interests as my interest. In the minds of those who had a different understanding of spirit, the practical manifestation of it will be different, but I'm calling for a modified understanding of spirit. And in this modified approach to spirit, the idea is that there has to be, it's an important absolute principle, there has to be a feeling that win-win is the major factor, not win, lose. Therefore, I see it different than you have presented it in this question, and I hope that my clarification is acceptable. Now, I have another question, which I'd like to pick apart, and maybe we just have a language problem here, but I think it's important to pick apart these words because I think they indicate something useful for all of us. Now, the question is that because some people have a particular kind of a nature, doesn't mean they have an evil nature, but they sometimes hurt their friends by words or behavior. Don't you have a word for evil in Russian? Not demoniac, evil, just evil. So, now, nobody by nature, I want to just clarify this, is evil by nature. The nature is spirit. One would say the cultivation, and perhaps over long periods of time or for some reason unknown to us, but the cultivation of the spirit may end up that somebody does something which is very harmful to others or very self-centered, and therefore others call it evil. Now, in your question here, you're saying basically that when you harm others, when you cause trouble to others, this is bad. In other words, evil is defined as that which is causing trouble to others, to me or to anyone else. Well, now we got other problems. That definition has problems. Now, every government takes taxes from its citizens and causes them pain and hurts them sometimes by bringing them to court or makes them bankrupt. Is this evil? A mother may chastise the child. A husband or wife may chastise each other. This may cause hurt. This may cause pain. Is it evil? Now, let's say I say something to you which hurts you, which causes you pain. Now, is it my motive that makes it evil or not, or is it the act itself? For example, in these previous examples I just gave, the motive is not evil. After all, the mother wants to instruct the child. The government needs to manage itself. I won't go further with that example. There are good intentions behind it, perhaps. So is the motive the main thing, or is there another factor? Let's say you've got a mother who's psychotic, who's neurotic, who has got so many problems, has got so many difficulties in her life, that she is just wrenching the life out of her children because of it. Now, isn't that interesting? Doesn't that change the whole conception of motivation of a mother? Now, previously we were saying how it was the good motivation of the mother, that the mother would try to do things, you know, for the sake of the child. But now we see a same mother doing something which might be similar, but which could be seen as simply a manifestation of her own sickness. So maybe the mother has motive to do the right thing, but it's colored by a particular disease. Good God, does this get complicated? How do you figure out where the evil lies, where it actually sits? Now, let's say the mother's got this disease, a sick person, and is projecting that sickness into the children, but doesn't think she's doing it, is not doing it on purpose. It's just her nature. But it's not really her nature, because she's not really that way. She's only that way because it came from her mother or her father, or when she was abused as a child, or maybe she just doesn't have the right chemicals in the brain. After all, when a person who doesn't have the right chemical balance in the brain does something wrong, we don't call it evil. We say they have this sickness. We say they have this problem, and we don't condemn them as evil people. Yet at the same time, let's say somebody's going through menopause and acts strange and weird and crazy and hurts others. That's another problem due to physiology, the biology of the body. What about heavy metal poisoning? What about atmospheric disturbance? What about allergies, which are making headache and causing disturbance and therefore throwing people off balance and making them unable to act according to their normal nature? If somebody has been created to be a certain way, made to be a certain way, do we condemn them as the evil or the one who made them into what they are as the evil? You would usually not condemn the person who has some kind of physical problem, biological problem, even psychological problem from their child. You would not blame them as being so evil in that sense. You would understand it. Then you go to the person who created them. Yeah, created, end quote. They've got the same exact kind of situation, probably. And how do you deal with them as evil or not? So perhaps we should start using the word sickness. There is a sickness here, a dis-ease, in the traditional sense of the term. A person who is not at peace with themselves because of various factors. Okay, now the question was about calling evil someone who's always hurting their friends by words or behavior. And perhaps it's because of their nature. We've already dealt with the nature jazz. But the question was about the labeling of this activity as evil. Well, labeling is where you get in trouble, when you have to start worrying about how to label it. That's a lot of work, and it may not give a very clear result. It takes a lot of investigation, takes a lot of patience, takes a lot of... basically, you have to be a first-class detective. Okay, so where does that leave us now? I mean, how do we deal with this question? I would say the real question is, well, what do you do about it? I mean, isn't that basically the real question? Isn't that the real thing that we're supposed to worry about? We've got this person, they act in a way which hurts or harms or whatever. So what do we do about it? And for each of the what do you do about it, you have to adjust it, you have to modify it according to who it is that has something to do. If it's your mother, how do you deal with it? Well, that's very different than if it happens to be your next door neighbor. That's also extremely different than having to deal with somebody who calls you on the phone sometime from far away, or somebody you see only rarely, or somebody you read in the newspaper. So what do you do about it would be better understood in terms what's best for you, what's best for the other person, and somehow balancing that. For example, if you are a leader, the way you deal with this is very different than if you're just a regular person. If you are a leader and somebody's acting in a way to hurt and harm others, you could deal with them in a few different ways. That's why we have laws. That's why we have codes. But those laws and those codes should be in the context of wisdom. They should have knowledge as their basis, not just simply some tradition or because we don't know anything better. Now, if you are just a regular person, and for example in this question, you have less options. You have to deal with everybody like on an equal term. You don't have the power or capacity to arrest them or push them away or whatever. You have to deal with it. So what do you do? Okay. How do you deal with it? Well, let's think about it. I have to deal with it in a way which is good for me and good for them. Because a solution just for me that doesn't include others is not a complete solution. So you're together or you're nearby somebody who's causing harm and who doesn't understand the problem of it. Now, you have to decide, is it important for you to continue to be with this person? In other words, are their defects significant enough to allow you to consider the possibility of severing the relationship? Do you want to sever the relationship? That's the first thing you would say. Is it in my interest to sever this relationship? Is this something I want? If the answer is yes, then we have to start worrying about the other person. How do I deal with this in such a way to minimize their difficulties so I don't become just like them? How do I somehow work this out for the best of both? That's the step one has to take. But what if you decide, no, I don't want to sever this relationship. It's important for me. Then you have to consider how to protect yourself from the hurt, at the same time modify the behavior of that person who is causing the pain. At this point, if you label what they are doing as evil, you're going to prejudice your own capacity to be able to effectively modify their behavior. Because I know if somebody's trying to modify my behavior and their underlying premise is that I'm evil, they're not going to get very far with me. I may be inconsiderate, I may be insensitive, I may not have proper education, and so on, but I'm not evil. So it's essential for my interest, in my attempt to modify another's behavior, I get rid of this idea that we're dealing with evil here. We're dealing here with an improper activity, but we should get rid of this evilness of it. And let's keep in focus that the reason I want to modify their behavior is because I'm hurt. I feel pain. I don't want to feel pain. Now, if somebody is causing me hurt like that, and I could find it advantageous to ask them, do you feel I am so, shall we say, bad in my life? I am so wrong in what I do that you feel a need to speak like this to me? In other words, asking them what it was you did wrong. You understand what I mean? In other words, instead of throwing it on them, bring it on yourself. In other words, instead of putting them on a defensive stance, which means battle, completely take it upon yourself to say, what is it about me that is making you feel this way? And listen very carefully. If somebody consistently makes jokes, for example, as was asked, about myself continuously, and these are hurtful jokes, and always denies that they said it, they say it's just a joke, there's a meaning to that. It means they haven't got the courage, they haven't got the capacity to honestly and truthfully explain exactly what's wrong. In other words, they are afraid and need an encouragement to actually speak properly. I hear that Rukmini and Kamala are listening in Denmark. Hi to all of you. No need to translate that. Just got your message on. You have to instant message. I'll get instant messaging, not this email. I just happened to look at it by chance. So what you do, the idea is to actually find out what it really is they're trying to say. In other words, to try to understand first. Sometimes people do this harm to others in a joking way because they just don't know any other way to deal with it. There is a psychological situation that has been researched about people who are clowns or people who are comedians. They often are those who are suffering the most within. They are people who have simply so many difficulties to practically speak about their problems, that they just deal with it by humor. They just make jokes out of everything because they don't want to face their situation. So one has to understand that such people are, with their humor in many respects, calling out for some contact. In other words, the way they contact others is by sharing their energy of humor and laughing together. So I would, in this particular case that I'm being asked about, I would avoid making any kind of judgment whatsoever and start the process of research if the relationship means anything. And actually listen, actually hear between the jokes. You know, we used to say read between the lines. Hear between the jokes. There are also people who continuously cause pain to others because what they're really trying to do is reach out for the other person, but they're incapable of doing it. Like the young boy who pulls the girl's hair in elementary school to get their attention. The young boy is saying, I'm pulling your hair because I want your attention. And the girl is thinking, you idiot, it hurts you're pulling my hair. Get lost. But if, of course they're children, but if an adult were to do it, okay, this is ridiculous. But the idea would be that if one would actually understand what's behind these seemingly harmful situations, we'd probably get much further in our relationships. Now, I can't say that this is the specific problem that I'm addressing from this question, but I can say that this is a general methodology that helps us, at least, understand more about others. And when we understand more about others, we have the capacity to be of service to others in a better way.